You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
They are entrepreneurs, okay? And then they're storytellers who build brands that breathe. Women who see possibility not just in ideas, but in culture and courage and conviction. Moai Kausi is one such woman. She's a creative force and visionary behind Pink Press Studios, a company that has redefined what it means to tell African stories through design, branding, and digital artistry. Her work doesn't just make things look beautiful, it makes people feel something. It's the meeting point between excellence and emotion, between business strategy and bold storytelling. Moai's journey is proof that entrepreneurship is not just about building companies, but building confidence too. Confidence in yourself, in your vision, and in your voice. And tonight we get to hear that story, the late nights, the lessons, and the light bulb moments that turned one woman's creativity into a brand that empowers others to see themselves more clearly. Moai, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to be stepping into your world this evening. I can imagine it is a very colorful world.
Yes, a very colorful world, challenging, but it's a beautiful world.
Yes, I love that. And let's get into it, right? Let's start where the dream began. When you first envisioned Pink Press Studios, what was burning in your heart that made you say, I'm going to do this?
Well, so for starters, when I just graduated, I think that was in 2017, when I just finished my first degree, I was like, okay, well, I'll wait for a job opportunity, let me do a hobby. So I started sewing, I started making bags. It was just for fun. I don't think at that time I was like, I'm going to make this into a serious business. At that particular moment, it was just, I was just doing it for fun. But then, lucky enough, I got employed the same year. But after some time, when I couldn't get a proper employment, I kept going back to that hobby. I was like, let me continue nurturing this hobby. So years later, in 2002, in 2023, it was when I decided to officially register the business. But initially, I was just looking at it as a hobby. In 2023, it was when I was like, let me make this into a business. So that was the year I decided to register it. And I sat down. I was like, what do I want to do? Let me just focus on making bags. Because I was looking at, in Malawi, not a lot of people make bags. A lot of people make clothes and other things. So it was still people go into the bag industry making bags. So I took that challenge. Like, I'll be the one to be making different kinds of bags. So that's how the dream started.
Oh, I love that. What is your history with sewing? Is it something that you saw a parent do or a grandparent?
So I my father is a pastor. So I grew up with a mother who was doing a lot of craft. So before she goes to a seminar to teach people, she would practice it at home. Maybe before going to a seminar, she would do some knitting, she would do some sewing. So I used to be very interested. Like, I would watch her doing all that. So before she goes somewhere, I would see her doing a pattern, making a pattern. I was very intrigued. Then in 2007, I remember we had, my father got an opportunity to go and study in the UK. So when I went there, I remember when I was starting my secondary school, one of the subjects, it was textile designing. So it had a lot of sewing machines. So when I entered that classroom, it was, you know, when a kid has gone into a candy shop. That was me at that moment. I was like, how can a school have a sewing room? So coming from a background whereby in Malawi we don't have such school, such opportunity. So having that opportunity, that's when the hobby started really, because I had watched my mother sewing and doing some knitting, and having that opportunity to be in a classroom with a lot of sewing machines learning, that's when I started having that interest in sewing.
Tell me about your
Yes.
first customer. And I'm asking about the first customer because
Yes.
getting that first customer is very validating. You feel like, okay, I'm not
Mm-hmm.
crazy. Somebody wants this thing. I remember when I got my first customer in business, I danced, okay? Because I was just like, yay, finally. Tell me about your first customer, the first person who said, I love what you're doing and I'm going to give you my money.
So my first customer was an in-law to my sister. So she saw what I was doing, and then she approached me. She was like, "Oh, I want a cosmetic bag and make it like a set." She wanted, I vividly remember, she wanted a set of cosmetic bag and a tote bag. And it took me 2 weeks to make that set. And when I finally made it, I was very excited. I was like, "Oh wow, I've actually made something." And she paid money for it. I was like, "Oh, so this thing can actually work. People can actually pay money." So when I made that set for her, she came with positive feedback. She was like, "Okay, so next time when you're making, make it bigger so that I can someone can fit their toiletries. And when you're making the tote bag, make the straps a bit longer." So it was positive feedback, which helped me to actually work on my product better. So that was my first customer, and I still have a picture of the first
Of
product that
course,
I made.
of course,
Yes.
of course. And what was your first disappointment?
My first disappointment, I got an order from a certain lady. She wanted a laptop case. So it was my first time making. So most of the times when someone has given me a project to make, I'll go on YouTube and watch some videos. How is this person? How are they doing it? So this time around, this person was like, "Oh, I want a laptop case." So they gave me that challenge. And when I went on YouTube, I couldn't find a video, someone showcasing how it's supposed to be done. And I had to figure it out by myself. It was a fail. It was a disaster.
Oh
And
no.
I it was a disaster. And I even called the person like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I failed to make your laptop case." And she was very understanding. She was like, "Oh no, it's okay. When you make it, you are going to give it to me." So that was my first disappointment, that I was unable to deliver something that the customer wanted me to do.
Can you make these laptop cases now?
I can. And right now we have a space. I started in my room on my bed. I remember the first thing that I made it in my room. And now, years later, we have a space, and we're even training other people, giving skills in tailoring. Now we have a space where we are making bags at bulk orders. We're able to get bulk orders for corporate. So it has been a lot of progress.
This is a story of
Yes.
dreams, and I do want us to get there, right? Tell us
Yes.
about the growth process, how it all began. Did you bootstrap? What were the first days of Pink Press looking like?
So the first days were full of dreams. It was just a dream. As I've already said, it was just a dream. So when at first I was just doing it as a hobby, something for fun. And in 2023, I had a very interesting conversation with one of my close friends, and she told me that, "You know what? Just open it. Just start. You don't need a lot. Just start. You already have a sewing machine. Just find a space. Maybe you are limiting yourself because you are doing it at home. So find a space." So when I shared the dream with my family, with my father, and then he was very supportive, and with my husband, he was like, "You know what? Let's do this. Let's find a space for you so that you can put your machine there." So we found a space, and when we started, we the dream was to be making bags, and we'll also be offering tailoring lessons. And I remember when we opened our first space this year in January, I didn't have customers. I didn't have customers, so I had to start finding more customers to sustain now the place. Now I've opened the place. I need to pay rentals. I need to pay bills. I needed customers, and we started with only 6 students. Mm. And out of the 6 students, 2 dropped out.
Oh,
we only
no.
had 4.
No.
Yes, we only had 4. But then I was like, this thing is going to work, because if people have believed in us that they can come and learn, it's going to work.
Yes.
So the first days, it was just maybe we'd have 1 customer, 2 customers. Mm. And it was usually maybe my friends, my people who know my sister, maybe the friends of my friends. And then eventually I was like, I need to expand this. I started doing a lot of posting on Instagram. Mm. That's where I started getting more customers. Mm. Yes.
And what kind of content were you posting? Because, you know, people don't like social media because they're like, I don't want to put myself out there. But also they think, I've been posting, but it hasn't worked. So what type of content works for you?
So at first, it wasn't working. I shouldn't lie. It wasn't working. I would post a picture, not even get a like, maybe just 1 like. Mm. And then someone gave me a hint that you need to start boosting your posts.
Okay.
You need to start paying your posts. You need to boost them so that they can reach a wider audience.
Yeah.
So the moment I started doing that, I was like, okay, when I do this, it means tomorrow I'm going to get customers.
Yeah.
I did that. I remember the first time I did the boosting, I didn't get any customer. Mm. I was like, so what's happening? I thought you said if I boost my post, I'll be able to get customers, but I was unable to get customers. So I kept on doing it each and every week, boosting my post. Mm. Eventually, I would see people calling, oh, I want to, do you have any bags available?
Mm.
Or people are just inquiring now, not ordering, but they were just inquiring. I was like, okay, at least I'm getting some feedback. Mm. People are seeing my post. So eventually I would see 2 or 3 people coming in buying some products.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest breakthrough for me was a friend that I was with at secondary school.
Mm.
She reached out. She was like, oh, I want a backpack. So I made a backpack for her. Then some weeks later, she was like, oh, at my workplace, we have a function and we're looking for cosmetic bags. Can you do it? Because we are looking for 600 cosmetic bags.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yes, we can do it. And at that time, it was just me doing the bags. And it pushed me to get help, to get another tailor.
Mm.
So when I got at that tailor, we were able to deliver the bags. I had to get a few more tailors on part-time basis so that we can manage them. The 600 order.
Sure. What about entrepreneurship? Or what about this journey has surprised you the most? The part no one could have prepared you for.
Yes, it has really surprised me because what I learned in school is not what I'm doing, because I have a completely different education background.
Yeah.
So with what I'm doing, I don't have any accounting experience, and you have to do a lot of bookkeeping as an entrepreneur. So it's something that you're learning. I'm learning on the go. And there's a lot of recording. You have to record almost every little thing that you do.
Mm.
Every expenditure, you have to record it. And no one tells you about that when you are starting, you are going to make a loss, a lot of losses.
Mm.
You're not going to make profit the first year. You're just going to be spending money. So those are some of the things that people don't prepare you.
Mm.
You and just having sewing machines, it's not enough. You need to have operational costs to run the business. So those are some of the things that you don't get prepared when you are starting the journey of being an entrepreneur.
Oh, I really, really love that insight. Talk to us about breaking even, because I think a lot of people quit on business, and the stats say that a lot of businesses, like I think 50 or 60% of businesses don't make it past 3 years, and it's even worse beyond 5 years, right? And so to be, so for you in these years, because it's a fairly young business in these years, why haven't you given up when when in the beginning it was, you're not making profits, you're just breaking even?
Yeah.
Talk to us about that journey.
So I remember I had this other order recently.
Yeah.
I think this my first big order.
Yeah.
I didn't really make profit. It was just breaking even.
Mm.
And I charged myself. I think I was just excited.
Mm.
And I didn't know that it was a corporate order. I didn't know that this corporate, when they're paying you, they deduct tax. So I didn't even put that into consideration when I was giving them an invoice, when I was giving them an equation rather. So I just broke even. It was, I didn't even make any profit, but it was a learning process for me. I was like, okay, so next time when I'm making, when I'm giving a quotation to a certain corporate, I should do enough research. I should sit down first before I give them a quotation. I should look at all the costs before I give them a quotation. So what has made me not to give up over the years, I think it's because of the passion that I have. It's something that I have built over the years, and I've taught myself how to sew, how to make bags. I didn't go to any school, so I took time to teach myself. So because of that, it's like, why should I give up? I've been teaching myself. I used to find time to sit down on my computer to learn on YouTube. So I've come a long way, and for me to just give up just like that, it's like, so all that learning was just, it's just in vain. So what keeps me going is the passion that I've built over the years, turning the hobby into now a full-time employment for myself and for others. I think that's what is keeping me going.
There's a myth, Mwai, and the myth is that creativity and business don't mix, that artists cannot be entrepreneurs. How have you proven that wrong in your own story?
I think I've heard of that myth before, but I believe that once you have passion for something, you define all the odds. Because I believe that when you're starting a business or when you're running a business, you should be passionate about what you're doing. Because most of the times it's like, for example, if I'm to find employment, if I'm to go to work, sometimes we knock off early because maybe we're not really passionate about what we are doing. But the moment you find yourself being passionate with what you're doing, you can even knock off at 12 midnight because you are enjoying what you enjoy what you're doing, and because you want to make it work, you start teaching yourself business skills. Okay, so how do I run this? How do I keep my books? I even know how to come up with a profit and loss account, how to come up with a balance sheet, because I don't want the passion to die. I want the business to keep on. So I have to teach myself some business skills, how to use Excel. And there's so many applications that can help keep my books in order.
Oh, absolutely. Now let's talk about the heart behind your work. When a client walks through your doors or lands on your pages, what do you want them to feel?
I want them to feel, my motto is a different look. I want them to have a different look of literally everything, a different look to a bag. Because usually in Malawi, most handmade bags, they're very expensive. Like people usually don't buy them. It's usually foreigners when they come in Malawi, that's when they buy that, or maybe they're getting it a gift for someone who is traveling. So I want people to have a different look, that you can get something affordable made in Malawi. Because usually handmade things are very expensive. So that's the first thing that I give to my customer, that you can get something affordable that is nice, unique, and something that can last you for some time. So that's the first impression that I usually give to my customers. And secondly, I want them to carry something that they can be proud of, that this is made in Malawi. Because we have a few things that are made in Malawi. It's different from South Africa and other countries, but very few things are actually made in Malawi. So I want customers, when they carry something, they be proud that, oh, this thing was made in Malawi.
Oh, I love that. Now, building a business often means building yourself. How has this journey shaped the woman that you have become emotionally, spiritually, and professionally?
Running a business, I think you pray a lot.
You cannot not pray. In fact, if you want to draw closer to God, start a business.
Exactly. This is the time to draw closer to God. I'll give you an example that has happened actually today. So we have an order that we are supposed to deliver tomorrow. And today we have been having problems with electricity. Eskom has been very bad. It was raining in the afternoon, so electricity has been very bad. So I ended up I had to borrow a genset so that we can proceed with the work. So I got the genset in the afternoon, but it was even failing to start. And I tell you, I went in the bathroom. I was like, God, I want this thing has to work.
Yeah.
It's either you give us electricity or this genset has to work.
Yeah.
And it was just a short prayer. I went back and I have to act strong because I have my employees. I cannot cry in front of my workers.
Yeah.
And at that time I wanted to cry. I was like, this electricity, this genset is not even working.
Yeah.
But I was like, let me just go in the bathroom and I should just pray. So I just went in the bathroom. I said a short prayer. I tell you, the genset is not working.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So So in this journey, I've learned that you cannot do without prayer. You just have to pray because there are so many things that will go wrong. Maybe your supplies will run out. You have an order that you have to deliver.
Mm.
You don't have electricity, like I've just explained. Or maybe your worker is sick and you have an order that you have to deliver. So you cannot do it without prayer. And one thing that I've also learned is that it's God giving us customers. And there are some people who have called me, oh, we are looking for these bags. We saw you on Facebook. We saw you on Instagram. I go like, God, this is you. I don't think this is Instagram or Facebook. But I believe that the customers that I've had, it's God sending them my way.
Yeah.
And the referrals that my friends give to other people, I believe that it's God. And another thing that I've learned is patience.
Yes.
Business would test your patience. So I've learned to be patient with myself because there are sometimes you expect perfection from your workers.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing it by myself for a very long time. So now I have a team who are helping me to make the bags. And there are times whereby I expect them to do the way I want them to, the way I do it, which cannot work. So I've also learned to exercise patience towards them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so profound. Building a business, oh no, I think I've already asked you that. It's not every entrepreneur, I know this for a fact, hits that season when things feel heavy, where passion just meets exhaustion. How do you navigate those moments when you're really losing your fire?
It's true. There are some times whereby you really lose your fire.
Yeah.
Maybe you are overwhelmed, you are just tired, you have maybe a lot of deadlines. And when in the industry that I'm in, making orders, you're always working on deadlines.
Yeah.
Like maybe you have to give a customer by the end of this week or by the end of today.
Mm.
So working towards deadlines, there are times whereby you get so overwhelmed and you even lose your spark that, you know what, I don't do this anymore. So I've learned that when I reach that moment, I need to take a break. So usually when I take a break, I go to Lilongwe to visit my father.
Yeah.
So that's the time I go like, let me take a break. I should go to a different environment, a different city. So I've learned that when you're losing your spark, when you're losing the vibe or when you're losing the interest, take a break. It's okay to take a break for a week, for 2 weeks, so that you can regain yourself and go somewhere and focus again. And so you go, I go to another city, so that I'm able to refocus. I should see my sister and my family.
Yeah.
So that's what I usually do.
Yeah. And in today's digital world, standing out requires authenticity.
Yes.
How do you stay true to your creative voice while also adapting to trends and client demands?
That's so hard because, you know, there are so many times whereby you want to follow the trend.
Yes.
At the same time, you have to be authentic. You don't want to copy. So I think what us as business owners, we struggle is being authentic, being real. Like, you shouldn't be copying what other people are doing.
Yeah.
So one thing that I've told myself is that I need to maintain what I'm doing. What is my goal? My goal is to just make bags. Because I've had several people coming to me that, why can't you add clothes? You know, there's this trend, you can be doing clothes.
Yes.
So I have to remind myself that, no, my, you are just making bags. Don't get carried away. So I think the bottom line is that I shouldn't get carried away. So that's how I've tried. It's still a process because there are some people, they are very convincing. They will come to you, oh, can you make this for us?
Yeah.
But then you still have to be authentic that, no, I just make bags and this is my focus.
Yeah.
So I have to constantly remind myself that no, this is my focus. I have to make bags, even though there are so many trends out there, but I need to remain, I need to look at my focus. What is my focus and what is my goal? Yes.
You know, from the work that you do and the things you've just said now, I've come together that you're a person who has an abundance mindset. And I really believe this because you train people now in tailoring and in designing their own things. How do you not have the fear of, no, they'll usurp me, they'll take over, they'll steal my ideas and all of that? How are you able to still stay in your niche and help others build something similar to what you are doing?
Actually, at first, I struggled with that because I was very hesitant to get an extra hand to help me make the bag, because I was like, she's going to steal my design. But then I was like, you know what? I have my own customers. Even if she's to steal my designs, she's not going to put the same touch that I put. The way I interact with my customers, it may not be the same with her. She can steal the idea, but I don't think she can steal the passion that I have.
You are the source.
So I exactly. So this is my passion. She can steal the idea, but I don't think she can have the same passion that I have. So I think that's what I can say on that one.
Oh, I absolutely love that. Let's touch on leadership now that you do have people under your employ, because running a business means leading people, right?
Yeah.
So what lessons have you learned about building and nurturing a team that also believes in the vision? Because I think this is where a lot of businesses die. That you just have people who are doing the work, but they don't necessarily believe in where you're going or why the work is being done. So how have you navigated that?
So at first, I had to learn how to be assertive, that I need to tell them what I want. Because at first, I would be very shy that, maybe if I tell them this, maybe they'll walk away, they will not come back to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I had to learn how to be assertive, that I need to tell them that this is, they need to understand that they are coming to work for me, and this is my dream. So I would refer back to the time I was employed. When you're going to work, you have a role, you have a job description that you have to do, and you have to follow that. So I remember the first time when I was employing our instructor, my husband was like, so what's the strategy? How are you going to employ this person? So I was like, yeah, I'm just going to put a poster on Instagram. I was like, no, you need to have a job description. If you employ this person, you need to give this person a job description. So like enough, he helped me to come up with a job description. I was able to come up with some rules and regulations that when this person comes, I need to give them what I expect them to do. So if it wasn't for him, I was just going to pick any person, say, oh, come and work for us. So at the very first, even though we only had 6 students, but I set the tone that this is a serious thing, this is a professional thing. I gave her a job description so that she's able to follow, that you have to come to work from 8, you finish your work at 3. So able to follow that. Sometimes it's hard because, you know, you are dealing with people that they may not fully understand, but I keep on teaching myself that I need to be assertive. I need to tell them what I want them to do when they come to work.
And how do you get them to buy into your vision? How have you gotten them to buy into your vision?
So for example, when I got the instructor, the first thing that we did the first week before the student came, I told her, I explained to her the vision. So I started explaining to her where I'm coming from, that I started this as a hobby. Now I've seen that there's a gap. People want to learn a skill now. Yes, people are working, but people also want to have a side hustle. So because of that gap that I noted, that's why we're opening this place, so that we are able to train other people with skills in tailoring. So we spent almost half a day me explaining to her the dream that I have, that eventually I want to expand this to communities, to secondary schools, whereby we can get students to be learning such skills. Because I went back to the time that I saw a sewing machine when I was in year 7, when I was just in Form 1. So I was like, I can give the same opportunity to other students who are in secondary school. So I was able to explain myself to her so that she, before she she takes up the role as an instructor, she's able to understand my dream and my passion, where I'm coming from, and continuously, almost now and again, I usually tell my workers that, you know, I started with one sewing machine. Mm. I started with in my bedroom, so that they're able to understand that. Mm. Oh, so she didn't just arrive at this place. Mm. She started somewhere. Yes.
You know what's powerful about what you're saying is that you shared your story.
Yes.
And from that story, there was relatability. And I think people don't realize the power of your story, not just in getting clients, because the reason your story would get you clients is because they are buying into what you've got going on. But if you've got employees as well, them knowing the story gives you buy-in. It gives you their buy-in as well in order to advance the mission forward. That's absolutely beautiful. Yes.
Mm. Now,
as a woman building a creative business in Africa, what barriers have you had to break, both externally and internally?
So, one of the biggest barriers that I have I'm still breaking, this industry of tailoring, creative, it's male dominated. Mm. Very few, it's now that a lot of women are coming up being tailors. Mm. But when you walk around in Malawi, a lot of tailors are men. So it's a male dominated industry. Mm. So that was the first thing that I had to break, that, okay, even though I'm a woman, I can still do this.
Yeah.
So, and another thing is that when you're going to get some materials, when you're getting part-time workers, sometimes they tend to look down on you because maybe you are young, you are a lady. So you have, as I've already said, I had to learn to be assertive, even with my suppliers. When you're going to get some things, they want to give you a different price just because maybe you are a lady.
Pink but tags. Then, pink
yes,
tags.
Exactly. Yes.
Excuse the pun.
Yes. So one thing that I've also learned is that I have maintained my suppliers. So I've built now a rapport with my suppliers that I have maintained the same suppliers over time. Mm. So the people that I get fabrics, they're the same people. So with them now, I've maintained that rapport that when I go there, they are more welcoming now. They are used that, oh, this lady, she comes and buys supplies from us. Mm. And another barrier that we face is the economy. Economy is still a challenge in my country, whereby issues to do with forex, and most of the raw materials that we use, they're imported. So when the economy is bad, we are also affected as small businesses, because it means that they're going to increase prices. So when they increase prices, when the raw materials have been increased, automatically we are supposed to increase our products as well. Yes. But sometimes it doesn't work like that, because you cannot just increase products. It means some customers may not be able to come back to you. So that's one of the challenges that I'm currently facing, having a balance with the economy and making sure that I still keep my customers, even though if I'm to increase prices of our products.
Yeah. And what's one piece of advice you'd give to a young creative who has talents but is terrified to start?
One thing that I would say is just that, you know, there's sometimes we procrastinate a lot. So I think procrastination, it has killed a lot of dreams for so many people. Yeah. And I believe if I was procrastinating that time, I don't think I would be where I am today. So what the advice I can give is that just start. If you have a skill, if you want to be a content creator, just start with your phone. You don't know where it's going to take you. Mm. If you want to be a tailor like myself, if you have a sewing machine, just start. Even though it's a second-hand sewing machine, just start with what you have. Mm. Eventually, you build, and consistency helps you to build something. Mm. So you just need to be consistent with what you are doing each and every time. And don't stop learning, because sometimes as a business person, you think, oh, you know what, we make bags, and you think that you cannot learn something new, but continue learning, because there's always something new coming up.
Yeah.
YouTube should be your best friend, because I believe YouTube is a whole university.
True.
You can learn so much. So don't be shy from learning and from asking. Like for me to be able to get some raw materials, I had to go around asking in shops, where can I get this? Maybe I would have a picture on my phone. I would ask the Indians, because they're the ones who supply us with a lot of things. Like, how can I get this thing? And one thing that I love about Indians, if you ask them like maybe two times, the next time you come to their shop, you see that thing in their shop. So I kept asking, like, where can I get this thing? And they would refer me, oh, go in that shop. So don't be shy. Ask around where you can get some things, and internet should be your good friend. There are so many things you can learn from the internet.
Yeah. And finally, when you think about legacy, beyond the clients and the projects, what do you hope people will remember about you and the world that you've built through Pink Press Solutions, studios rather, not solutions?
Yes. What I want people to remember is that you can turn your passion into an employment. That's the legacy that I want to leave, because there are so many people out there. They have passions, they have talents, which they're just sitting on. Yeah. But I think what I want people to remember about me, if I'm to die today, is that your passion can be turned into an employment. Because I used to think that my degree, the one I went to school, is going to be my career, is going to be something that's going to be to put food on my table. Lo and behold, it's the talent that I nurtured that I realized when I was 11 years old, when I entered that classroom, when I saw my mother who would sew, who'd make patterns, who'd knit. So passion can be turned into an employment. So that's what I would want people to remember about me.
Oh, man. You know, tonight you've reminded us that entrepreneurship has got so much more to do with just strategy and spreadsheets. It's really about the soul. You talk about passion, you talk about motivation, because it's really about what's in your heart and what you bring to the world, right? You've shown us that purpose can have a brand, and that beauty can have backbone, and that when women dare to create from the heart, they don't just build businesses, they build movements, and a movement is what you have built. And I absolutely love watching it. So all the best, and thank you so much for having this conversation with us.
And thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure, and I feel honored to be here and to share my dream with you.
Ah, cheers, Moi. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And with that, I am Nompumelelo Lombonani, and I hope you have just made sense of your business. Fresh Mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.